Yes, hello. It's Macy's Man Cave time. It's Macy's Man Cave. Welcome back. Or welcome. Just welcome. Welcome. Like the intro? See, many of my British listeners will know that is the music to The Long Good Friday, the greatest, greatest gangster film. British gangster film, possibly. Yeah, it's not. It doesn't beat Godfather. Don't worry about that, American friends. But that is The Long Good Friday. And it is The Long Good Friday. It is Good Friday today. This is episode 42 of Macy's Man Cave. Happy Easter to you. Happy Easter 2024. On what is yet another wet and miserable, shitty fucking day here in Essex. It's Good Friday. It's April the 29th, 2024, and it's Easter. It's a long weekend, therefore it's a long Good Friday. So I am obviously paying homage to the greatest British gangster film ever made, starring the late, very great, Bob Hoskins. Didn't have many misses, our Bob, I don't think. I've got a Bob Hoskins t-shirt, which I'm going to wear to David Lloyd today, just to show my respects, pass my respects, a mark of my respect to Bob Hoskins, who starred in, what did he star in? Mona Lisa, Long Good Friday, obviously. Didn't have many bad films. There was one dodgy one, I think he starred with Chris Rock in this kind of buddy. It was all a bit weird. There was a bit of racial undertones in that. I seem to remember. Mona Lisa was particularly good. He was in the BBC series Pennies from Heaven. What else was Bob Hoskins in? Oh, he played Shmee in Hook, Steven Spielberg's Hook. How many times are they going to remake Hook and Peter Pan? Anyway, if you've never seen, I think I've said it before on this pod. I'm pretty sure I have. If you've never seen The Long Good Friday, especially to my American friends, it is a film that you need to see. It's full of amazing quotes. Hang on, what's this one? That's not it. Hang on. Here we go.
Nothing unusual, he says. Eric's been blown to smithereens. Colin's been carved up, and I've got a bomb in me casino. And you say nothing unusual?
Bomb in me casino.
You need a $1 million computer to understand this. Do such a thing? It's outrageous. Outside of church. You don't go crucifying people outside a church, not on Good Friday.
You don't go crucifying people outside a church, not on a Good Friday. I might have to watch it later. What else is there? What was the one I used to remember one quote. I couldn't find it. I found those two, but I couldn't. There's one quote I used to. He's speaking to the bent copper. There's a bent copper called Parky, and Parky's telling him to back off, and he says something along the lines of, it's something along, I paraphrase, bent law can be tolerated as long as it's lubricated, but you, Parky, are becoming positively barged. If I was you, I'd run for cover and batten down those hatches, my son, or else you'll end up on one of those meat hooks. And the other brilliant quote that a lot of people mention in the film is the one where it's coming towards the end. He's going to go to war with the mafia. He goes to a meeting with the mafia, and the mafia don't want to know. So Harry's been, I don't want to spoil the film if you haven't seen it, but Harry's been having some issues. One of his, he went on holiday, or he went away. And one of his minions got involved in some drug deal that went wrong with the Irish Republican Army. And so he's got the IRA on his back. And then he was trying to do a deal with a mafia to help him buy some land down at the Docklands, which was ahead of his time, this film, because this is when the Docklands in London were just derelict buildings and unused Dockland, wasteland, and Harry was gonna fund development of the docks, which is obviously what went on to happen. It's now, you know, one of the leading financial centres of the world, London's Docklands. But anyway, the mafia come over. Charlie, I think it was. No, was it Charlie? Anyway, the mafia come over, but they get cold feet because they find out that Harry's having some problems. His pub's been blown up. Various things are going on. And he says this, he stands up in, I think he's in the hotel, and he says, what I'm looking for is someone who can contribute to what England has given to the world. Culture, sophistication, genius. A little bit more than a hot dog. Know what I mean? This is classic quote. But it's a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant film. Saint Bob, Helen Mirren, another Charlie, the guy who was in Casualty, long-running BBC show in England. And, it's Easter. It is Easter 2024. I used to look forward to Easter. I don't know if you're looking forward to it or not. But now I'm not woke or anything, trust me. I'm not woke. I'm not anti-woke, you know. I'm not... There's been a few things this week. And it feels just like I've been looking on Twitter and little things keep happening. And you get right-wing people up in arms about it, saying it's the end of British culture and civilization as we know it. And then you get everyone on the left saying, oh, why are all these red gammons, why are all these gammon men getting upset about tiny little things, right? And so there's three examples. So the first example was the St. George's flag on the back of the England shirt. Got changed from the normal white and red cross to Nike changed it. What did they say? A playful take on the St. George's flag. And Twitter and the media went into meltdown because it's kind of like these apparently LGBT type colours, and it's not the St. George's flag, and it's just another... So you get everyone on the right outraged, and it's outrage what they're doing to our national heritage and our history, and then you get everyone on the left saying you're all flag fucking chaggers. Why get upset about this? It's irrelevant. It's just a tiny little thing. You shouldn't lose any sleep over it. But then you kind of like see all these different little things happening. So then that was one. Then there was Cadbury's advertising their Easter eggs as celebration eggs. So everyone was getting up in arms about the fact that it's not called Easter eggs anymore. You're not allowed to celebrate Christianity, and you're not allowed to celebrate, things that are traditionally associated with British and English culture. It all has to be toned down. But at the same time, you know, there's Ramadan messages on the boards at Euston Station or King's Cross Station. There's Ramadan... celebrations and going on, and every politician needs to turn up at a mosque and join in with the Muslim faith to celebrate Ramadan. But you can't mention Christianity, you can't mention Easter. So that's been going on as well. And there was something else. What was the other thing? And there was something else, and it was just really minor. But it feels like that, you know, all these little things just kind of keep adding up into one big thing. And it does feel, I don't know what you feel like, but certainly it feels like our traditions and our heritage just keeps getting chipped away at little by little, bit by bit. I was reading something today. It was if you apply for a job internally at St John's Ambulance now, you're asked to provide your pronouns. And if you select rather not say, you get like bullied online. Like, you've said that you would rather not give. Why don't you want to give your pronouns? Why? And then they go on to explain why they think it's important that you give your pronouns and all this kind of stuff. I mean, where the fuck did pronouns come from? Seriously. I mean, when did it become? I see it all the time. See it on LinkedIn. See it on emails that I get from people, from the council and clients. And it's like he, him, you know, they, them, they. I mean, it's just, isn't it just fucking bonkers? I mean, where did it come from? When did we get so bogged down on just this mundane, petty fucking bollocks? It's just ridiculous. Oh, God. But yeah, so Easter's here, and I can't remember the last time I had an Easter egg, I'll be honest. I was a bit partial to a Caramac Easter egg. But I always remember when I was growing up, Easter eggs being quite a big thing, but not massive, but like we'd get Easter eggs for my mum and dad and maybe the old aunt and uncle or something like that. And I seem to recall the chocolate being thick as fuck. Now, that might just be me, just having small hands and being a kid. But they seem to kind of, maybe they were the same back then, but, you know, it's all this kind of shrinkflation. You look at the Easter eggs now and they're flimsy and the chocolate's wafer thin. And if you do it the way up, it's like you spend a fiver on an egg, whereas if you bought that in chocolate bars, it'd be like 1/10 of the cost. Was that the same when I was growing up? I don't know. But I do seem to recall that the eggs that I got, or that we used to have, me and my sister, used to be really thick chocolate. And like the, you know, like in proper boxes. Some of this me moaning. You'd get, like a lot of the eggs, they don't come with anything. Like you'd open up an Easter egg and it'd be full of Smarties. Or you'd open up an Easter egg and it'd be full of chocolate buttons. And it was like, proper, not thoughtful, but you know what I mean? Or it'd come with two or three bars additional, but there'd always be something in the egg. And so, yeah, so the girls have got that to look forward to this weekend. It's a nice 4-day weekend, so you get Good Friday off. Is that everywhere? Do the Americans, do you have Good Friday and Easter Monday? I'm not sure if you have the same holidays as us. So that was the other thing, the celebration eggs. So they're calling everything celebration eggs. Again, chipping away. It's not Easter, it's celebration. But it is what it is. If you celebrate Easter, good on you. If you don't, good on you. Got the girls going. We're going out Good Friday. We're going down the club today. And they've got an Easter egg decorating session, which I know they're going to love to bits. And then Saturday, got... I haven't got anything Saturday. Oh, yeah, we're going shooting again Saturday, getting the guns out. My son Dan's taking the twins out, and me and Gemma are going to Romford to do some more shooting. Did it a month or so ago, and going back, I did it for my birthday, didn't I? I think these are moving targets we're going after. So doing some shooting in Romford on a Saturday, which, as I said before, is normally just in Romford Town Centre, but we're actually going to be in a controlled environment. And then Sunday, I am cooking a big Sunday roast, so I look forward to that. I've just realised I've got some bread sauce left over from Christmas, so I'll be getting that on. And then, without wishing the week away, Monday, nothing planned, and then Tuesday, going out, it's West Ham United versus Tottenham at Tottenham, evening kickoff, and it's my son Daniel's 30th birthday the next day. So me, Dan and Alf are going for a nice posh evening steak before we head to London Stadium to go and watch the Mighty Hammers. So that is my weekend. But in the meantime, I think you know this. I do have something to share with you. I think you do know this. You know I'm not a conspiracy theorist, yeah? I'm not into those conspiracies, right? 9/11, you know, it happened. It was a disaster. It was a tragedy. And, you know, you've got people that are saying it was a controlled explosion. Some people even say there weren't jets. You got the man on the moon, you know. It's never happened. Stanley Kubrick filmed it, you know, in Hollywood. It was, you know, they've got, you know, conspiracy theories about man on the moon. Then you got your JFK shit. Princess Diana stuff. What's the latest conspiracy theory? Oh, well, you know, what's her face? Princess of Wales isn't really, you know, she's dead already, or and all these things, you know, videos of her have been faked and all that kind of stuff. So I like reading about that kind of stuff. I like seeing things like that getting debunked without question. But I do believe in one theory, and it's my conspiracy theory that I will die on hill over. And again, I think I've mentioned it before. I think I've, you know, this is 42 episodes I've done now of this. And I know for a fact that I've talked about my iron blown up at least once, maybe twice. Okay. But yet again, since the last time I did a podcast, the very latest Morphy Richards 200 stupid pound iron that we bought 1 year and 1 week ago blew up the other day, or stopped working, right? 1 week after the guarantee expired. Now, you tell me that's a coincidence. And I'm telling you, that's three or four of those fucking irons I've had. And again, love her to bits, but she kept sticking with this fucking horrible Morphy Richards iron. Yes, it did do the ironing. Yes, it did have a big water reservoir. Yes, it was pretty good at what it did, but it never fucking lasted. And so the very latest one, gone. Gone again. And if it was not for the fact that my beloved wife is one tenacious, when she's on a mission, she's on a mission, and she refused to accept that, you know, she wasn't entitled to a full refund. And bless her, she got it, got a full refund, even though it was out of warranty. I think it was from, actually, she got the refund from Amazon where we bought it. And she would not let it go. She would not let it go. And she got the refund. And thank God, thank the Lord, that we have now moved away from Morphy fucking Richards and their shitty fucking expensive irons. We've now got don't know what make it is actually, Phillips I think it is. Same kind of thing, really expensive. No doubt it will break at some point, but I do have this theory, whether it's iPhones, whether it's fridges, washing machines, they all seem to have this shelf life, don't they? I'm sure there's a chip, or it's something that they manufacture them with certain components that they know that there's a shelf life of that component of just over the guarantee or the warranty period. And it's fuckers like you and me that have to put up with it. Like back in the day, your mum, your dad, your nan, your granddad, they would buy shit and they wouldn't be replacing it for years, 10 years, 15, 20 years. Fridges, irons, pans, pots, whatever. I'm telling you, they would just, we just live in this ridiculously disposable world. But we also live in this world where I just think these corporations just fuck us over with their little microchips that goes, oh, warranty expired last week, right? This wire or this particular component, that's it. Off you go, go and die, make the whole item redundant, and you have to go out and you have to fucking spend an absolute fucking fortune on a replacement. It's just not right. It is not right. What else was I going to tell you about? Last time I was talking about swimming and swimming pools, and I kind of forgot about the main, one of the main things that I was going to talk about, which was about why was it that when you went swimming lessons, when you was a kid, don't know if they do it now, but when you did swimming lessons as a kid, in order to get one of your badges, you had to put your pyjamas on and retrieve a brick from the bottom of the bottom of the pool. Now, what was that all about? Because I don't know about you, but when, you know, since I've been older, you know, since I've grown up, since I've learned to swim, I don't think there's ever been a time where during the night there's been a need for me to rescue a brick in my pajamas. I mean, I'm sure it might have happened to someone, but it certainly hasn't happened to me. And I just was just thinking about that experience of swimming when you was a kid and just the difference. So like, I take my kids swimming, Millie and Tilly, and we just get in a pool and we have a laugh and we throw each other around and we do all sorts of good, you know, just fun stuff, underwater, plays, you know, fighting and all that kind of stuff. And I just remember when I was a kid, putting aside the lessons and the swimming down for the brick when you're dressed in your pajamas, you couldn't have any fun. You went swimming, but it wasn't swimming to have fun. It was like a miserable experience. The only time I think you used to get any kind of joy out of it is when you either got away with stuff, or like you was playing with your mates or whatever, or it was the before and after. Like the swimming pool I used to go to in York, it's now on all these, by the way, was called Edmund Wilson Swimming Baths. It was massive, really big. It was like one of those ones where it had stadium seating and things like that. In fact, I think I swam in a competition there when I was in the Scouts. But anyway, it had stadium seating, so people would have competitions there. It had a little training pool. The biggest, hugest pool in terms of like Olympic size. It had a massive, massive diving board. And one of those ones where you get like, there's a halfway bit and then there's a full height bit. And the, you know, the deepest deep end you ever, I mean, I don't know, is there a law or something, but you know, you used to like walk, you'd be able to walk until it got to about 5'6", and then it had this deep kind of incline into the deep end. And the deep end was a deep end, it was like 20 foot deep, and like you'd spend, that's when you'd have a bit of fun, because you'd have, you know, competitions to go down to the bottom until your ears popped and stuff like that, or jumping off the diving board. But everything when you was a kid going swimming in the 70s, early 80s, was geared to you not having fun. It was like an intentionally miserable experience. They even had the sign up, you might remember the sign, this cartoon bloke, and it was like attention, and it was like no pushing, no jumping, no diving, no smoking. What was it? No petting. I never knew what petting was when I was a kid. That's when he was standing next to the bird in the pool and they're having a little kiss. So there was a no petting, so I wasn't quite sure what petting meant when I was a kid. But we used to go to Edmund Wilson's. My mum used to buy these books of tickets during the summer holiday. So you'd get like, in the summer holidays, you have these little, they'd be easily copied now. They were just like basic white books of tickets where you'd go and go swimming with one of these tickets. I think it was 15 tickets for £1.50, 15 pence to go swimming or whatever. And it was the experience of getting there. It was a long fucking walk. It would take about 3/4 of an hour to walk there. We never had a car. My mum and dad never had a car. There was no direct bus route. So you'd have to walk. We used to have to walk across a big moor to get to this swimming baths. And it just made me laugh because I was remembering that you'd go, the changing situation in this swimming bath. So that I've never seen it before or since. So you'd go into this kind of foyer area where, no, it wasn't. No, you go into your changing room, right? So girls are going to the changing room, boys are going to their changing room. I mean, that's in the day when, you know, It was boys and girls changing rooms. It wasn't he, him, them, her, she changing rooms. There wasn't, you know, there wasn't this notion of men being entitled to go into whatever changing room they wanted to, depending on what sex they felt they were that day. But, you know, you had proper male and female changing rooms. Then you'd pick up an empty white basket that had a coat that was molded into a coat hanger. So it was a coat hanger, and then hanging from this coat hanger was a little basket. And you would get that with a rubber band, and you'd go into your little changing room, and you could basically go swimming in just a pair of flip-flops and some shorts and a t-shirt, and that basket would be too small to fit in what you had. It was the tiniest fucking ridiculous basket ever. And you'd put your clothes in there, or you try and stuff your clothes into this tiny little basket, and you'd have to give it back to the attendant. You'd give it back to the attendant, who would then put it on a hook that corresponded with the number in your rubber basket, on your thingy. No lockers, nothing like that. Everything, all your valuables, just totally just hanging there with the attendant, if he wanted to rifle through. And given the fact that you couldn't stick everything in the basket anyway, 9 times out of 10 things were falling out and falling onto the floor and stuff like that. And served by, I just remember this guy in a white t-shirt. He looked like, he reminds me of the last time I kind of, he resembled, if you've ever seen Terminator 2, he was like one of the orderlies from the mental hospital that Sarah Connor was being held, like big fat geezer with this just the skin tight white t-shirt on and like white white trousers or white jeans or something. And he was just the grumpy, slick back, greasy hair. And he was just the grumpiest motherfucker you'd ever met in your life. Ever met in your life. And of course, you'd give him your stuff, you'd go swimming, and you'd do all the usual stuff. You'd play with your mates, you'd hear the whistle going off every fucking 2 seconds because someone was running or pushing or petting or, you know, dive bombing off the top of the... Oh, yeah, you could only jump off the middle bit, but if you wanted to go to the top bit of the diving board, you had to do a dive. There was some crazy rule. And I was never a good diver. Can you imagine me? Most kids would just go onto the middle board, and you'd just jump off and do dive bombs off that. But every now and again, you'd get some like rebel that would go to the top diving board and do a bomb off that, and then obviously the whistle would go and all that shit. So yeah, then you'd get changed, and the best, what I just remember in the summer, hot, it'd be boiling hot outside, you've just been swimming, you stink of chlorine, and upstairs, overlooking the pool, was a cafe tuck shop with, and they had the video game Defender, which was rock hard. Scramble was I could do, but if you remember Defender, it's where it's really fast, and you had a button that you could do a hyper loop or something, or going to hyper, but it was just really hard. It just way too fast for me. So they had I think a Pac-Man. So you'd go in there with your 10p's, whatever, and it was the first time I ever experienced a slush puppy machine. And they had a slush puppy machine in there, and I was just like, I would live to go there. I was the most, I'd get excited, not to go meet your mates, not to go swimming, but just to go there and have a slush puppy. And they used to do grape-flavoured slush puppy. I'm telling you, man, it was just, oh my God, I can taste it now. Just the taste of the slush puppy was just fantastic. And yeah, so that would be your swimming experience. That's the bit I missed out. I mean, it was hardly worth waiting for, I know, but yeah, I was talking about, but you'd have that whole kind of, you'd be in the baths for about 45 minutes to an hour. But because it was so far from the house, it'd be like a whole almost a whole day experience, because it, or even, you know what it's like when you're a kid, like when you're meandering back from the baths, you're never going a straight line. It's like when I used to go to school, I used to walk to school on my own with Neil Butterfield, who was the other geezer who worked, lived in my street. So we used to walk to our primary school. So I'm probably the same age. Can you imagine it now? So it's a lot further than where my girls go to school now. And the most direct route was go to the bottom of our streets and Swivens Walk, turn left, go up Poppy Road, and Poppy Road School was at the top of the road. That was the most direct route to my school. But it was just boring. It was boring. So we'd go like a completely different way. 9 times out of 10, we would go through, there's an old abandoned waterworks that's kind of on the way. So you'd kind of go through there and, then there'd be an alley where you could, on the way home from school, you couldn't do it on the way to school, but on the way home from school, there was this alley and this about 15-foot wall that backed onto some kind of like terraced houses that used to go up the hill to our school. So at the bottom of the, so if you can imagine some rows, just picture some rows of terraced houses going up a hill. At the bottom of the hill is this brick wall that kind of separated the terraced houses from a street that ran parallel. Anyway, it's very hard to describe. But there was this 12-13 foot wall. So on the way back from school, me and my mates, we'll obviously just jump over the wall, like just do kind of SAS, CI. No, it would be the Bodie and Doyle professional type, like scaling down the wall type activities to amuse ourselves on the way back. This is just fucking terrible, isn't it? Sorry, it's my Easter special talking about how to get to school. But literally 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, and would you let your kids walk best part of a mile, half a mile to school these days? Jesus, you wouldn't let your kids play out the front these days. It's so scary. There was a thing on the TV yesterday about just a stabbing in broad daylight on a train in London. Just ridiculous. It's just a scary, scary place. We need Jesus to come back, don't we? That's what we need. We either need Jesus, and I've talked about it before. I've talked about it before, aren't the aliens coming to save us? So if you've got Netflix, I've started watching this mini-series thing by some two nerds that made the Game of Thrones called The Three-Body Problem. And it's all about us either being saved or killed by an alien invasion. I've been watching that. That's been quite interesting. So, like, it's got all these people kind of like, well, they can't wait for them to arrive because we clearly can't look after ourselves, which I've been saying for quite some time, haven't I? Or they're going to come down here and they're just going to wipe us out off the face of the planet and take over the Earth. One of the two. It's kind of a slow burn because it's 400. Apparently, it's going to take them 400 years to get to Earth. So I'm on about episode 4 or 5. Production values are quite good. It's got some stars from Game of Thrones in it, and what else is there? There's kind of like that London. A lot of it's based in London and MI5 and all this kind of stuff. But yeah, it's all right. It's adequate as alien invasion shows about aliens invasions go. So that's my recommendation of the week. What else have I got for you? Did see something else this week about straight hooks. Some bloke posted on Twitter the other day, or X as it's known about. He actually found a packet of straight hooks. And those of you in the know will know that straight hooks are one of those things you get asked to go and find on your first day of work. So there's skirting board ladder. I remember that was one. So if you're starting a new job and you're in the building trade, or the decorating trade. You'd go and ask to go down the shop and get some straight hooks. Go and get a skirting board ladder. Striped paint was another one. A long stand. Go and ask Fred. Go down the yard and go and ask Fred for a long stand. And of course, a long stand was you'd go and see Fred and said, "Oh, all right, Fred. Charlie sent my John. It's my first day today, and he told me I need to come and get a long stand." "Oh, you need a long stand, dear John. Okay, mate. You just wait there, then I'll be back in a minute." And you'd literally be standing there for fucking an hour and a half. The long stand. Well, my one was chicken lips. I don't think I've mentioned this. If I have, I apologise. I am getting old, you know that. Chicken lips. So when I was working at York Racecourse, I got sent by the head chef to go and get some chicken lips. And because York Racecourse is like, it's got lots of different restaurants and concessions, I was going into various different restaurants and various different concession stands. And each one had obviously been, had it before. "Oh, yeah, I've come to get a bag of chicken lips." "Oh, yeah, I'm sure there's some in the freezer," because every one of these places used to have these big, massive walk-in fridges and freezers. "I'm sure there's a bag in there. Go and have a look. Go and find them." You know what I mean? And you'd go in there for 45. "I can't find any chicken lips anywhere." And, of course, chickens don't have lips at all. So that was quite my work experience, actually. Which I really, really enjoyed. That's when I had these delusions of being a chef, being a kind of a top-class chef, good cook. And I can cook. I can cook now, but I actually thought I might do it for career. But then you realise it's just so fucking hard work. Like the hours that you have to put in and the amount of cleaning. Half of it, most of it's cleaning rather than cooking. I think my first day, apart from getting sent to go and get some chicken lips, I had to separate. I've told you this before, I am sorry. But I had to make some duck liver pate. Yeah, and to do that, we were serving duck as a main course. And to make the pate, of course, you have to basically gut the ducks. I had to gut 500 ducks and separate the livers into a separate pot. I remember clotting some cream on my first day. I over-whipped the cream using this massive industrial whipper. I stood on Willie Carson's foot. He was a jockey, famous jockey, when I was growing up. I stood on his foot carrying a plate of lobsters. It was quite an experience, really. And I think at the end of the 2 weeks' work experience, I actually got paid. Not much. And then I went back and I did some banquets, and I definitely got paid for that. But they used to do these things called split shifts. And so you'd get in at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, and 8 o'clock in the morning, maybe even earlier, and you'd work your bollocks off till about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and then you'd get sent home. No, I think it used to be midday, and then you'd get sent home for a couple of hours, and then you'd have to come back for 3 o'clock, and then you'd work from 3 o'clock till like midnight. It was just so many hours. I remember working there one summer. And just like working every single day and just ending up with, like, I remember, like, after about 3 or 4 weeks, like £100. And I just remember it being, oh my God. I went to, where did I go? Topshop. I remember buying a brooch. That's the era we're talking about. I bought a crocodile brooch. A brooch that had, it was a crocodile basically. And that was to pin on my shirt. And the reason why I bought this crocodile brooch was because Dave Garn, the lead singer of Depeche Mode, was on the front cover of Smash Hits wearing a similar brooch. So I was following Dave Garn in the fashion. I think I bought some pointy black shoes, if I remember rightly, some tight black jeans and a yellow shirt. I thought I was the shit. But before I did the work experience, so when we were actually in school term, one of the most memorable experiences of that period for me was when I was actually doing the work experience. Of course, everyone, you're doing work experience, you're in the last year of school, and all the other kids are at school, right? And so I was cycling to the race course down this road, and there was an all-girls public school on the route. Can't remember the name of the school. There was definitely an all St. Anne's or Queen Anne's, I think it was. all girls. And I had my bike. I can't remember what it was. Maybe the replacement from the race that I got nicked. I've told you that story. And I'm riding like, and it was a hot day. It was like hot. I want to say May. Hot May day, it's 3 o'clock, the schools are emptying out, or was it lunchtime? One of the two. And because I'm riding my bike, I've taken my jacket off, and I've got my jacket, I'm holding my jacket on the handlebars. So I'm riding my bike with my jacket on the handlebars, and the sleeve from my jacket, just as I'm approaching this school, I want to look cool, my long blonde hair waving in the wind, I'm pelting it. I'm a flash racer. I'm quite, you know, I'm dressed in civvies because I'm going to work, doing this work. I'm going to cook some shit up. And I'm pelting it. And there's all these girls coming out of this girls' school. And right outside the exit, bang outside the exit, going full pelt, fast as I could go, fifth gear or whatever gear I had on. What was it, 10 speed, 15 speed? The sleeve of my jacket has kind of have come loose. It's not within my grip. It's not on my, it's not underneath my hands, and it's gone into my front wheel. And the whole jacket's got ripped from my hands, and it's gone into my wheel, and the wheel has just stopped, bosh, like that. And I have fucking flown. No word of a lie. Like, it's like one of those, I'm sure you've had it. It's like, I don't remember doing it, but I remember seeing myself do it, if you know what I mean. You know, like when you think you're watching yourself, because this front wheel is fucking jammed, and I have launched right up in the air, like proper Superman, fucking reaching for the heavens. And I have just gone fucking flying 10, 15 feet in the air, landed, arms, legs, scuffed to fuck, bike like follows me after, smacks me on the head, whatever. And then you just got all right in front of this posh all-girls school, the exit to this posh all-girls school. I just never been fucking, everyone's fucking running over. You all right? I got cuts and bruises. I was just fucking died of embarrassment. I think the front wheel's all fucked on my bike. And like, you know, pick myself up and like kind of hobble off, pushing my bike down towards the race course. It was just such an embarrassment. Never lived it down. I think there was a girl there that I actually really, really liked as well. Oh my God, my youth. If I'm not getting my bikes nicked, I'm getting them fucking flying through the air because I got the fucking shit caught in my jacket caught in the front wheel. But the thing, that's what you do when you're a kid, right? You make stupid mistakes. I've made plenty of stupid mistakes. Unfortunately, my daughter Tilly had a school disco yesterday, Easter celebration. Disco. Oh, just we can't call it Easter, can we? Celebration disco, end of term, and all excited, rushing to get out of the car to go to the disco, and she trips or catches herself on a seatbelt and smashes herself face on the floor, cuts all her lip open. Oh, Jesus, man! So poor kid. So I think that's about it. I know it's been a bit of a. Again, another one of those rambles, not much structure, but it's, as I said, it's Good Friday. I don't want to kind of take up too much of your precious time when you've probably got so much to do. I haven't even chosen a bit of exit music for you today, which is just outrageous. I might have to press, no, it is outrageous. I should have been a lot more prepared than I am. So let me get you one. I know what I was going to play. I've got it here. It is. There it is. I've got it here. Right. So I'm going to leave you with. I never was into punk. Punk wasn't my thing. It really wasn't. But this song came on the other day and I thought, I haven't heard that for ages. I really like that song. So I'm going to leave you with it. And because it's quite appropriate, I would say, because what's Easter about? It's about Jesus, crucifixion, and then him rising up, as you know, and coming off, you know, so he got crucified and then he was risen. And so this is Rise by Public Image Limited. Have a fantastic Easter. I wish you all well and I'll see you next time.
Could be wrong. I could be right. Could be wrong. I could be wrong. I could be right. I could be black. I could be white. I could be right. I could be wrong. I could be white. I could be black. Your time has come. Your second skin. So high, the game so low. Walk through the valley. The written word is a lie.
May the road rise with you. May the road rise with you. May the road rise with you. May the road rise with you.
Could be wrong. Could be wrong. I could be wrong.